This is an I Am Listening original podcast.
Where we're going to be losing all this skilled employment at Chatham Docks now, you know, we're not going to be replacing those jobs with what's coming next. And I just find it really sad that, you know, we're not talking about creating communities. We're just talking about numbers, numbers, numbers. Now, that's not how communities form or how they thrive.
Welcome to the Kent Politics Podcast.
In this week's episode, we hear about the ambulance service getting a grilling from local councillors, claims CCTV problems are leaving a borough open to crime, and the political fallout of tens of thousands of homes in Kent being left without water. I'm Simon Finlay, the local democracy reporter covering Kent County Council, and I've been joined by Robert Boddy, who reports on Medway.
Hello.
And Dan Esten, who covers the borough and district councils.
Hello.
And Nikki White, who looks after what's happening in Westminster.
Hello.
This week's guest is former Rochester and Strood MP Kelly Tolhurst. First up, though, Rob, what have you been looking at this week?
Representatives from the South East Ambulance Service were before Medway's Health and Adult Social Care Committee answering questions about a Channel 4 Dispatches documentary, which had undercover footage from the Medway Emergency Operations Centre where 999 calls are taken. The documentary showed the stretched resources of the ambulance service and how this meant some people in extremely serious situations were left waiting, as well as the intense pressure call handlers are under and the emotional strain it places on them.
What did the representatives have to say about it?
Very little, to be honest. They said an investigation was ongoing, so they couldn't go into great detail about the situation. However, councillors on the committee weren't particularly impressed with this, and acknowledging the hard work of ambulance staff and those in the call centres, said the ambulance service's responses immediately after the documentary was broadcast and since seemed more concerned with how the footage had been obtained rather than the problems that it exposed. Councillor David Field called the initial response, quote, defensive, but the representative said this wasn't the case, but they had to consider the consequences of undercover filming on patient confidentiality and the trust of their staff. They said they will be providing a full update responding to the issues from the documentary once their investigation was completed in the new year.
Thanks, Rob. What have you been looking at then, Dan?
So I've been turning my attention to the situation with CCTV in the borough of Ashford. Basically, council sources in a position to know told me that about 30 CCTV cameras around the borough, which is a pretty significant proportion of the total, have been malfunctioning in some way, in some cases for many months, and basically said that this has not been looked at and it's actively been getting in the way of police acquiring evidence for crimes that they really should have access to the CCTV for.
Is there any idea how this came about?
Well, Ashford Borough Council has agreed in principle in the past few months to relocate its CCTV monitoring centre to a shared service with Swale over in Sittingbourne. Some of the people I spoke to feared that the service is basically being run down ahead of the possible move next year and that the council are consciously deciding not to repair busted cameras. It's important to say that there's no firm date or plan for any move that's been established, though it is meant to save about $300,000. And obviously the council strongly deny the idea that they're being run down, and they didn't respond to the idea that it's impeding police investigations. And the police force didn't say so either. They said the information wasn't to hand and therefore couldn't be confirmed or denied.
Did the council say much of anything about the alleged camera malfunctions?
Perhaps unsurprisingly, they were reticent to give too much information and for the story to run. And needless to say, we've not published the locations of any of these long-term problematic cameras for pretty obvious reasons. They argued that with so many cameras under their responsibility, basically it's inevitable that some will malfunction from time to time and that they stay on top of repairs. But they also said that the complaints may have been spread maliciously and suggested it could even be scaremongering.
Sir Simon, what's been on your radar?
One piece of significant news this week is that Kent County Council's soon-to-be-retired chief executive, Amanda Beer, has changed her mind and has decided to stay on. She was intending to retire last month, but had agreed to stay on until March 2026. But in that time, there has been a recruitment process going on. And I understand that three shortlisted candidates have all been told that the process is no longer happening. Anyone who knows anything about this will tell you that hiring candidates can be quite tricky. I think that most people who know Amanda Beer would have wanted her to stay. They say she's talented, calm under stress, friendly, and actually loves her job, and well, not least because it carries a near £270,000 pay package, if you include the pension. It's understood that she will remain until KCC is abolished under the local government reorganisation, when all 14 authorities in the county will be replaced by a much smaller number of larger unitaries. One opposition councillor, the Green Party's Stuart Jeffrey, welcomed Mrs Beer's decision to stay on, saying it was a really good thing. A KCC statement said, officially, KCC is pleased to announce that Amanda Beer will continue as chief executive on a permanent basis. Amanda has previously planned to retire in March 2026, but following constructive discussions with the leader and overwhelming support from her colleagues, she's committed to remain in post and is enthusiastic to continue leading the organisation.
So what changed her mind?
Well, I'm not sure, but I think that she and leader Lyndon Kemp-Caron have what you might call an honest and robust relationship, but they get on reasonably well, and I think they actually quite like working together. Plus, maybe I'm speculating here, this is such an important time for local government, and perhaps you might fancy that Mrs Beer would like to be part of the team that's reshaped local government in Kent. Most people would say that she probably would be good at leading one of the new unitary authorities, but whether she'd stick around for that is anyone's guess. But overall, this has been greeted as very, very good news for Kent and Kent County Council. Right, Nikki, what's caught your eye this week?
Well, spare a thought for Tunbridge Wells MP Mike Martin and thousands of his constituents who've been left without water for several days.
Yeah, it's terrible, isn't it?
Yeah, it's been awful. It all started at the weekend on Saturday when a bad batch of potentially harmful chemicals were mistakenly used at Pembridge Treatment Works, and that led to them being shut down. Initially, it was thought that some progress would be made by Monday morning, but as of Wednesday, still 24,000 residents were without water in Tunbridge Wells. Now, drinking water had been restored to around 12,000 properties, but when a problem with the quality issues returned, those people saw themselves without a supply again on Wednesday morning. Customers were then told that they might see supplies return later that day, which would mean that they would at least be able to have a shower and flush their toilets, but they wouldn't be able to drink any of it without boiling it first, and that's going to happen for another 10 days, and so that's really, really not good news. Several water stations were set up so people could collect bottled supplies, and of course home deliveries were being made to vulnerable customers who were signed up to the priority register, and we've also seen mobile toilets being brought into the town centre. However, several schools have had to close, as well as many, many businesses and public buildings. Now, having to deal with all those problems is bad enough, but what hasn't helped is that people were being given times of when the water would be restored, and then those times would just get pushed back. And then, as I said, some properties got their water back, and then only to find hours later, it was off again. So now South East Water has apologised, and their staff have been working around the clock. There's hundreds of them out there trying to not only fix it, but help get emergency supplies out as widely as possible, but it hasn't been good.
Yeah, it's a time when people look to their MP for help, and he has been very visible, Mike Martin.
Yeah, he has, absolutely. Mike Martin has been pumping out messages, keeping people informed of the latest situation and where they can go to get help, as well as putting pressure on South East Water since the start of all this. Not only as the representative for his constituents, but also as a consumer, because unfortunately for South East Water, he was also one of the thousands of people who were left without water. Now, he's described the situation as an utter disaster, and said that the CEO of South East Water, David Hinton, he needs to resign at the end of this crisis. Now, it's not the first time this has happened. In 2022, water was cut off for 6 days over Christmas in the area, and Mike Martin has said of Mr. Hinton, and I quote, "We've been here before," and he vowed to fix things so it couldn't happen again. We now know that's not true. Now, Mr. Martin said, from the failure to provide sufficient resilience in the local network to the terrible communications within the community, enough was enough, and if David Hinton had any integrity, he'd resign straight away.
It's not just Mike Martin who's been involved either, is it? The situation has caught the eye of politicians nationally.
Yeah, it has. Mike, as you know, is a Lib Dem, and party leader Ed Davey came down to Tunbridge Wells on Tuesday to show his support. He said the situation had become an emergency and called on the Secretary of State to deploy national resources, including the army, if it was needed. And then on Wednesday, Ed Davey raised the issue at Prime Minister's Questions, saying the situation was now a public health emergency. And he called on the Prime Minister to convene COBRA to get a grip of the crisis and get it sorted. Now, Sir Keir said he'd been following the events, and he himself described the situation as shocking. He said the government would be bearing down on matters as it is such a serious issue.
Okay, thank you, Nikki.
Is there a topic that you would like to be discussed on the Kent Politics Podcast? Perhaps you've got a question for one of our panel, or you'd like to comment on a hot topic in local or national government. Get in touch by emailing or sending a voice note to Kent Politics Podcast at thekmgroup.co.uk.
Our guest this week served as MP for Rochester and Stroud for just under a decade. She fought the 2014 by-election, which saw Mark Reckless, who had defected from the Tories to UKIP, win the seat. But 6 months later, at the general election, she stood again and unseated him. She held a number of roles in her time across a range of departments. Last year was a casualty of Labour's landslide. Kelly Tolhurst, welcome.
It's lovely to be here.
First off, it's been sort of over a year since the general election. How has life been in adjusting to life outside Parliament?
Yeah, well, I can't believe it's been over a year already. It does feel like a lifetime ago, actually. Mm. When I think back to last year's election, I can't even believe it was just still last year, actually, because it does feel like so much longer ago. Absolutely, it was a big adjustment, because when you're a Member of Parliament, it sort of consumes every part of your life. Mm. It affects your family, your friends. So it was really strange, but I count myself as one of the lucky ones, because I hadn't spent my whole life trying to become an MP prior to becoming one. Mm. So for me, I just sort of went back to my normal old life. So whilst I miss my, you know, I miss the people, I miss the ability to be standing up for the area, actually, it's been nice also to get my life back a bit. And, you know, I'm still in the place where I was representing, so nothing's really changed other than I don't have a big job in Parliament anymore.
Yeah. Was it sort of a strange adjustment in the sense of, because obviously politics can be quite confrontational and there's a certain element of you've got to justify what you do a lot of the time. Mm. Was it strange to sort of come out of that and all of a sudden you can make decisions and you don't have to, you know, you're not having people like us in the media questioning you about them and things like that?
Yes and no. You know, I think that's part of politics, right? If you're going to have a view, you've got to be up for the challenge. And I think, you know, some challenge you like, some challenge you don't, which I think is quite normal. But, you know, I think that's part of the role. And do I miss it? Yeah, I think I probably do in a way. I miss sort of being able to, you know, maybe affect things like I had more of an opportunity before. Now that's gone, I'm now like everyone else, just shouting and moaning at the TV or the radio. But yeah, I mean, I've not gone anywhere. So whilst I'm, you know, not elected, I'm still sort of involved, you know.
You mentioned there's sort of, you feel like you're one of the lucky ones. Is there a part of you that wishes maybe you were still in Parliament to sort of, although you would be in opposition, and obviously that comes with its own challenges of you can't affect policy and that sort of thing, but would you want to stay in the fight, or do you quite like being on the outside and that sort of sense?
Well, I think when I said I'm not one of the lucky ones, because for me, it was always a vocation as opposed to a career choice. So I didn't leave school and think, right, I'm going to be a Member of Parliament. You know, I went and had a life, you know, worked, done proper jobs. Mm. And, you know, I had an opportunity to represent the place I come from. So, of course, I jumped at that as I was involved in local politics. And yeah, of course, absolutely. You know, absolutely. I wouldn't have fought the last election if I hadn't wanted to be still in Westminster. Mm. And yes, it is frustrating. You know, this, I still care about the same things as I did prior to the election. So there's things that still frustrate me for, you know, about what's happening in the Medway towns. I still have a little bit of a voice because, you know, obviously I was a former Member of Parliament, but I'm not the Member of Parliament. Mm. So, you know, it's frustrating. And I think when you care, I mean, I got into politics because of my area, not because I was desperate to be a politician, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
So, you know, I haven't stopped caring about the place I live. So, yeah, I would still like to be the person who's trying to represent and affect change or keep things as they are, whatever that might be. Mm. So, yeah, I miss it. But what I mean is I've adjusted to going back to having a normal life and going back to doing a normal job, because that's what I've done for the majority of my working life.
Yeah. Kemi Badenoch's been in post now for about a year. And although she appears to have given a better account of herself in recent times, you know, there seems to be a school of thought that come the next elections in May, when the Tories are expected to do quite badly, do you think she's going to survive that?
Well, I mean, it's quite interesting. I think it's really Kemi has got a really difficult role, really, because she's come in as the leader of the party after, you know, completely bruising, which I was a casualty of, at the election. And, you know, quite rightly, people were incredibly frustrated frustrated with us as a party and frustrated about some decisions or some of the non-decisions. And so she was always going to have a mountain and a hill to climb. And it was always going to be tricky to be the first leader after such a bruising as a party. You know, I think Kemi, what I've picked up speaking to people over the last week, I think people were quite happy with her performance last week at the budget. And I think people have sort of been a little bit rallied by that. But I still think she's got a long way to go. I still think that, you know, it's really important that, you know, we're making it really clear about what our values and what the Conservative Party stands for. And, you know, we've got to be listening to people. We lost because I think, you know, people perceived us not to be listening to them. Yeah. So she's got a mountain to climb, yeah. I still think.
Yeah. Well, you know, equally, the Liberal Party are probably doing even worse than the Tories, which is quite something when you're meant to be in government. Yeah. You know, you must look at this government and think, you know, 18 months in, it's an absolute shambles now, isn't it?
Well, I mean, I have to say, I've personally been, am I surprised about what Labour are doing? No, of course not. You know, they're socialists. You know, they're always going to do, I think, what they're planning on doing. They're just hiding from it by using a rhetoric that doesn't necessarily match up to their actions. But, you know, I have to say, I mean, all right, I was only an MP for just under 10 years, but I have never known so many people to be so worried and have been discussing the budget as they had prior to the budget last week. I'd never known it. I mean, everyone you spoke to, whether it be...
It's because they leaked so much of it beforehand.
But it's so unusual. And it started in the summer. I mean, people were talking about what was coming in the budget in the summer. I mean, it's just madness. So I think, yeah, I mean, I think it's definitely been an exercise in how not to... lead up to a budget, really. And I think whilst we could criticise, you know, Conservative Party and what we've done over the last sort of 14 years, I don't think we ever had quite as, you know, on a run up to a budget, quite so much fear, I would say.
But Liz Truss did wreck your credibility, really, when with that train wreck of a budget statement. It didn't really enhance the one aspect of the Conservative strength has always been to be able to run the economy.
Oh, absolutely. You know, no one can deny that the events of that budget, you know, really affected us, out the way people judged us, and well, it affected everyone because it had, you know, direct impact on people's lives.
To take us sort of more locally now, one of the big campaigns you're involved with is around Chatham Docks and the Save Chatham Docks campaign. For listeners who might not be totally across this, Chatham Docks currently has a number of businesses on the site, but is owned by Peel Waters, who want to turn it into predominantly housing. Last year, they gained planning permission for a section of the site to create a business park called Basin 3, which the campaign said was the first step towards the end of businesses like ArcelorMittal Kent Wire on the site. This year, Medway Council put forward its draft local plan, which sets Chatham Docks as for mixed use, including housing. So what is the sort of the campaign's plan? How is it? I presume you're going to keep on fighting, but what are you going to do? And are you fighting a losing battle?
Well, to be honest with you, I'm completely and utterly depressed and upset about where we are today. And the reality is they've won. Labour and Peel have won. Because ArcelorMittal are currently going through the process of consulting with the employees at Chatham Docks to close the business. And, you know, for me, it's a great sadness because they've won. They got what they wanted. They got what they wanted. They wanted to shut down a industrial site in the Medway towns. And unfortunately, the local council and, you know, the local leader of the council and the Labour Party, who made all the promises about backing workers and backing our historical industries and supporting businesses, sided with a developer, hence allowing the planning application to go through and still not using their opportunity that they had to designate the docks as a working port in the local plan. They chose to designate it for housing, and basically we're now in a situation where ArcelorMittal will be making, you know, are in the process of talking to people to make redundancies, and that will be it.
The reason why Labour are in charge now and are doing this local plan now is because a previous attempt under, when it was a Conservative administration, failed to create a local plan back in 2018 and subsequent attempts. Is it just a case of whichever political stripe this council would have been in, this would eventually have been the case? Or do you really think that there was an alternative version where say, a Conservative administration been in charge, Chatham Docks wouldn't be put for this use?
So my view, and it's always been my view, even when the Conservatives were in control locally, you know, the local plan has got to be more than just about houses and housing numbers. And that has been the case with the local plan for a number of years, obsessing about numbers and not even what type of housing, just numbers.
Mm. Yeah, but that was your government, you know, that were pressing those numbers.
Well, absolutely. But with a local plan, there is more to a local plan than just the numbers. You've also got to establish infrastructure. You've got to establish business, you know, industrial space where, you know, people can develop and grow. You can't just build houses without any other plan or how you're going to deliver everything else.
Yeah, but successive prime ministers have ignored all the pleas of every council in the country saying, we haven't got enough hospitals, we haven't got enough schools, we haven't got enough roads and roundabouts and slip roads and bypasses. You know, that's been the problem, is that every council in the country has been raising these concerns, and every government and every prime minister in the last 20 years just completely ignored them.
I wouldn't actually say that. There were opportunities like the HIF. You know, I get criticism by the current Labour council saying, oh, you know, the MP at the time, you know, celebrated because we lost all this funding for the HIF bid. Well, actually, there was money available for infrastructure development, hence the HIF, to open up housing land. So there was opportunities by the government to give the money for spending on infrastructure. I just happened to not agree with the plan on the peninsula. And actually, if we had come up with a plan for something slightly different, actually, the money would have been there to help us deliver on the infrastructure. So I think there were opportunities, but the problem we had at a local level was they didn't really care about all the other things. It was just this complete obsession about numbers. You know, we had an opportunity. I mean, one of my campaigns during the last election was, well, why don't we turn Lodge Hill, which is a government-owned site, into having a second hospital? Oh, no. We didn't want that because we wanted the... They didn't want that because they wanted the capital receipt from the sale of the land for housing rather than handing it over to a new hospital. So I think there are lots of opportunities and different ways you can cut a plan. But for me, the focus was just on houses. And, you know, that was demonstrated by not supporting Chatham Docks. Mm-hmm. You know, Chatham Docks was a great... You know, it's a unique piece of infrastructure. It could have been used to develop the businesses there. There was an alternative plan, which I think you guys would have seen. And, you know, what a shame. Why weren't we championing businesses and growth and skilled jobs? But now what we're going to end up with is probably a load more flats, a load more retail units or units that actually now, because of what was said in the budget last week, people are going to not want to rent because of the business rates be too high. And actually we're seeing, you know, small businesses suffer in the current economics. So where are we going to be losing all this skilled employment at Chatham Docks now? You know, we're not going to be replacing those jobs with what's coming next. And I just find it really sad that, you know, we're not talking about creating communities. We're just talking about numbers, numbers, numbers. Now, that's not how communities form or how they thrive.
That's obviously, I presume, a big thing that lots of people talk to you about, even though you're not the MP anymore. I mean, do people still... What are there other things that people come and talk to you about and ask you about? Because I think you've said before when we've spoken that people still come to you as if you're still the MP to solve their problems.
Yeah, yeah. Anything, really. I mean, I've had some today. But, you know, one of the main focus is, and people who still talk to me about, is development. People are very, very worried because obviously there is so much being proposed in the local plan. Yeah. And, you know, people are rightly concerned if they can't get GP appointments. We all know that Medway Hospital continues to struggle. We all know it. You don't need to be a medical expert. You don't need to be a rocket scientist to work out that Medway Hospital is at capacity.
Yeah.
So if you're going to double the population size, you know, the current facility is not going to be able to keep up. So we're still not talking about credible plans about how we deliver healthcare across an expanding local population. We're not talking about that sensibly. We're still not making strategic decisions. For example, you know, where's the next crossing going to be on the River Medway? Why aren't we even having those discussions? Because, you know, if we are going to get people moving around the Medway towns, we need to start thinking about these big decisions now, not sort of you know, in 12 months when we're desperate, you know, when everything's broken, we need to have a plan for that future, which I was hoping the local plan should have been able to deliver some of that. But in my view, it's missed all the big questions. It's missed all the big asks. But sorry, that wasn't quite what you were asking me. But I mean, housing is a big issue. Still get a lot of casework. People still want me to pick up their casework. And it just all sorts of things, really. All the things that I was dealing with before. So health benefits, SEND, you know, young children with disabilities, you know, that's still a real problem for, you know, and a concern for lots of parents across the towns. But, you know, I still care about those things.
Yeah. If you look at the end of the seemingly endless stream of defection to reform, I mean, not least recently, Jonathan Gullison and Robbie Lammers, are you tempted to become another?
I don't think so. No, I don't think so. I don't think...
Turquoise not suit you then?
No, that's right. I mean, look, you know, I'm a Conservative and it may not be a popular term at the moment, but, you know, I am proud to be a Conservative. I can't really see me jumping over to the other side, and I don't think they'd want me anyway.
Do you see why they've done it? Can you understand their logic, and do you think it's sort of out of a conviction, or is it, you know, they're looking at the polls and they think that's the way the wind is blowing?
Yeah, so my view, I think I'm a natural Conservative. You know, when I started work, I was always followed public affairs, and, you know, I was always probably Conservative leaning, but I didn't, you know, I became a Conservative.
You think you lived like a Conservative?
Yeah, I think I did. I think that's, you know, who I am. So, you know, yes, of course, I don't agree with all the policies of the Conservative Party, but it doesn't make me not a Conservative. Mm. And I think that, you know, people will look at different things and, you know, they will look at reform and think, oh, crumbs, you know, reform are doing well in the polls. You know, that might be my only route to staying a member of parliament or staying as a local councillor. But you know what? It's up to them. But at the end of the day, I might be wrong to say it, but I think it's probably driven more about their own personal position as opposed to their care and for the country or for the local area. It's a way of staying in the game, I suppose.
I mean, you mentioned earlier that sort of one of the things about leaving Parliament was you get all this time back because you've got so many commitments as a Member of Parliament. But I think from some of the things you've also been saying that you'd quite like to be a Member of Parliament again. Am I right to take that you are planning on standing again next time around?
No, I haven't actually made a decision. I mean, I had a nearly 10 years and, you know, I loved it. I'm enjoying being outside of politics. It's too early for me to say, really. And it's actually not my choice, you know, because you have to get selected. True. So, yeah. You know, whether I want to or not is irrelevant. It's whether or not the association would still want me to run. And that's not a question that I've posed to them or they to me at the moment. And it was a great time. But also you have to be really clear about why you're doing it. Would I want to stand just because I want to be back in Westminster? Or, you know, is it the right thing to let somebody else, you know, stand back and let someone else have a go? Or, you know what I mean? It's sort of, it was never about, going back to what I said initially, for me, it was never about because I wanted to be an MP. It was I wanted to represent my area. And actually you could do that in a number of different ways. You don't have to be a Member of Parliament or a councillor to have an impact, but also you get the opportunity to be a bit more selective about what you focus on. You know, rather than having to deal with all things when you're not an elected member, you can pick your real pet things that you want to get out there and campaign for. So I don't know, but yes, of course, I wanted to win last year and I didn't. But at the end of the day, it's for my association, and then ultimately it would be for local people to decide whether they want the girl we kicked out last time or someone new.
Well, thank you very much, Kelly Tarhurst.
Okay, thank you.
The headline news this week has been the plight of the thousands of people in Tunbridge Wells who've been losing their water supply because of an issue with South East Water, as Nikki's been telling us a little earlier. Now there are calls for the boss, Dave Hinton, to resign. Should he go, Nikki, in your view?
I don't think he should. I mean, I know there's a lot of people calling for his resignation, but I don't think he should, at least not for this. I mean, this feels more like it's a rare cock-up rather than months and months of poor management. Now, whether he should resign over other issues at South East Water is another issue. But for this, I don't think so. For me, when problems like this happen, I'd rather see someone at the top stick around, take ownership and get it fixed. And then I think we should judge them on how they deal with the issue rather than what initially happened. Now, of course, there's always going to be some situations where a quick resignation is the only thing to do, but I don't think this is one. I mean, for me, what I feel has come out of all this is it's just remembering how important water is to us all. You think, oh, you know, there's poor people without water, but suddenly you think, oh, can't flush my loo, can't do my washing, can't have a shower, can't have a drink. There's just so many things. And our reporters have been out in Tunbridge Wells and have seen that there's so many businesses that have had to close down as a result of this. Now, I hope by the time people are listening to this podcast, things have actually been sorted. People need to make sure that they're looking at Kent Online for the latest updates. But as we speak, there are still thousands of people without water and with a little idea of when it's going to come back. And it's just not good. It's worth remembering. I mean, many people have had friends and family they've been able to go to and have a quick shower or get some washing done, but they've just not been able to do that in their own homes. And that's without all the water we use for drinking and cooking with. I mean, for me, it's times like this, Simon, when it's worth checking in on your loved ones and anyone who's vulnerable and making sure that they're signed up to all the priority service registers that the utility services have available. You know, you might be really angry with South East Water, but the staff on the ground are really doing their best to get it done. And the priority register is there for people to sign up to. It's free, and it means that if you've got a problem because of your age, a health condition or a disability, you will get help straight away. And I think it's absolutely vital that those people get the help first and should do so. You know, make sure you get these things in place before you need them.
Okay, thanks. That's good advice. As you said, keep an eye on Kent Online. This is probably going to run for a few more days at the very, very least as we speak. Rob, should Dave Hendon go?
Well, I'm of a similar mind to Nikki, to be honest, in the sense of I think the people who are calling for him to resign, it's not really about this specific instance. I think obviously it's not great that this has happened, but it could be, you know, we don't exactly know how this came about. Was it just basically a mistake? It's emblematic of the fact that people are just tired of water companies. There seems to be never any good stories about water companies. We don't go, oh, you know, that's the really good water company, they've done something really great recently. It's they're pumping sewage into rivers, it's, you know, leaks, constant roadworks, the services aren't being provided as they should. And so I think basically people just consistently are angry about, and we also hear about, you know, these water bosses getting huge payouts, you know, bonuses
and share dividends and
exactly,
all the rest of it.
I think people are just incredibly angry, and so this is just I don't think it's they want specifically this water boss to resign. It's they want them all to resign. They don't want them anymore. They just want decent quality water. They don't want sewage going in rivers, and they want a good service that's not going to cost them an arm and a leg.
Well, we should just at this point perhaps just make the point that it's Southern Water, not South East Water, that's got fined for dumping the sewage into the rivers and the coastal waters. That Southern Water is the sewage company. And
South East Water, if you ever mention their dividends and shares, they will point out to you that they have not paid dividends to shareholders for quite some time.
Indeed.
Obviously they're very sensitive to this matter.
Well, they are, and I think we should make that sort of differentiation just in case anybody wants to get their lawyers in touch. Anyway, Dan, do privatised monopolies like water companies work in 2025 in your view?
I think evidently not. The privatisation of water is one of the even countries with governments that have a historical commitment to pointless privatisation for its own sake, like, for example, Chile, they haven't privatised water. In fact, privatising water, as I remember, is actually the objective of the bad guy in the James Bond film Quantum of Solace, who intends to buy and privatise all the water in Bolivia, which gives you an idea of how sinister an idea it is when you really look into it. But I think it's obvious that public support for water companies being privatised, if it ever existed, certainly doesn't exist anymore. They have a terrible reputation for good reason. I imagine Southeast, you know, obviously there's a problem with these chemicals in this instance, but I imagine Southeast Water bear at least a good share of responsibility for it, because if they could blame anyone else, they would already be doing it. So I think this will bolster the sort of gradually growing case that what's been obvious to some of us for a very long time, that the provision of basic infrastructure such as water is the proper domain of the state and not profiteering private companies. The problem is that when you privatise essential infrastructure, same goes for gas, electricity, railways, for example, a lot of the companies which buy up shares in the firms set up to run the privatised industries, because they're too big to fail, basically. The government won't let them collapse. So a lot of the companies that buy up shares in privatised infrastructure are things like pension funds, index funds, hedge funds, that kind of thing. So nationalising them has potential quite bad secondary economic consequences. But I think, you know, at some point in the next decade, presumably, the state will have to do something about the state of water companies. And either they, you know, buy them up and take off on these huge liabilities that they owe to shareholders, or they take a kind of principled but potentially very dangerous and expensive stand and say, no, nobody gets their money back. This belongs to this country and no one else.
Yeah, because I'm old enough to remember British Rail, and then they privatised the railways into obviously different bits. Somebody owned the railways, somebody owned the stations, somebody ran the trains and the services. And although it was marginally better than British Rail, I have to say the service didn't really get any better. The trains didn't get any better. It didn't run on time and any more than they did under British Rail. In fact, in some cases, they were a hell of a lot worse and a hell of a lot more expensive. And I suppose that, renationalising probably does have a downside too.
And with the railways, Margaret Thatcher was reported to personally be opposed to the privatisation of the railways because she thought it would be too convoluted and involve too many regulators, which she was correct about. And now it was only John Major who actually jumped the gun.
But she was actually not in favour of people owning their own council houses. I mean, she had to be persuaded of that. So she could see that somewhere down the line there could be sort of, you know, disadvantages to these things as well as, the good things. Right, Mike Martin, Nicky, seems to have had a pretty good crisis so far on the terms of his profile and being proactive.
Yeah, I mean, he has done what you hope that every MP would do. The fact that he was personally involved as well, I mean, that you would like to think that wouldn't make a difference and he would be doing this job anyway, but he has been experiencing what everybody else has been experiencing. But he's certainly, you know, been getting the messaging out there on a very regular basis since the weekend. So, you know, that will have helped an awful lot of people. He's certainly been piling on the pressure to get things sorted. He's got Ed Davey to mention it at PMQs. He's also been talking to the Water Minister this morning to try and should this continue, because at the moment, again, as we speak, things may have changed by the time this podcast airs, but you know that nobody at the moment can stay with any confidence when that water is going to be back on, and the people of Tunbridge Wells that are affected are going to be able to just turn on their taps and not think about it again. But yeah, it's quite worrying, but Mr. Martin certainly seems to have done his job that everybody would want him to do.
So had a good crisis. He's had a good crisis. Okay, that's your lot this week. Thanks to Nicky, Dan and Robert for their contributions, and to our special guest this week, Kelly Tolhurst. Don't forget to keep an eye on Kent Online for the latest politics coverage. And you can also sign up for our politics briefing newsletter by visiting kentonline.co.uk/newsletters. And don't miss KMTV's politics show every Friday at 5 p.m. See you next time.
Thanks for listening to the Kent Politics Podcast. Don't forget to check out stories throughout the week on the politics page of Kent Online. And you can watch the Kent Politics Show on KMTV every Friday at 5 p.m. or on demand at kmtv.co.uk.
This has been an I Am Listening original podcast. For more information, head over to our website, iam-listening.co.uk.